Welcome to this month's Fraud Talk, the ACFE's monthly podcast. My name is Mandy Moody, and I am the media manager here at the ACFE. And today I am very excited to talk to John Gill, the VP of Education, and Bruce Doris, the VP and Program Director here. And we're going to talk about the top five frauds in the news for 2014. What these looked like, what the implications are, and maybe some things that we learned and we can take into 2015. So welcome today, Bruce and John.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mandy.
Okay, let's start off with something that actually is still breaking in the news and has broken over the past few days. We had three out of the five sentences for the five people that were charged with aiding in the Madoff scheme. So these sentences are pretty great to hear for the victims and for people still searching for justice. What do these say to the victims, and what does it say to the people out there working still? We had actually one of our regents, Bruce Dubinsky, work on these cases. What does it say to them that they're still looking to hold these people accountable and they're actually going to be facing time? I believe the sentences were 10 years for one person, 6 years for the secretary, and a 2.5 year sentence today for one of the programmers. So kind of tell me what this says to everyone.
Well, Mandy, from my perspective, it depends on who the victim is, because there's a lot of victims that look at a 2.5 year, 6 year, 10 year term as that's nothing compared to the millions that I lost. You know, I'm destitute forever now because of Bernie Madoff, and not just Bernie Madoff, who gets 150 years, who will never see the light of day outside of that prison, but they look at those sentences as, hey, look, I'm in a sentence for the rest of my life because of these people, yet in a couple of years, they get to get out and at least do some work. But they've got their freedom, but they took my life away from me. So, you know, to some, it's a great day that they were held accountable, but to others are going to look at it as just not enough, especially when you look at what the government wanted. And, you know, some of them even reduced even half by what this judge did.
I agree with Bruce. I think the sentences could definitely be stiffer, but at least we got a sentence. They didn't just get a slap on the hand and probation and sent on to possibly do this somewhere else. And I like the fact that they didn't allow them to get away with the excuse of, well, I just worked there and I was just doing what he told me to do. And I thought that was a great signal to send to employees that, look, if you know wrongdoing is going on and you sit there and you're complicit with it and you don't say anything, that yes, you can be held just as responsible as the people at the top.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
They're held accountable, but you know, I still think that part of, you know, working for Bernie Madoff, and in some cases, you know, when they were teenagers, you know, does that, you know, that Stockholm syndrome start coming into play with a few of them and what the judge thought about as their sentence? Yes, they're sentenced to imprisonment, that's true, but would it have been more had they been more complicit? I don't know, but I just think that in light of what happened, you know, the sentence is fairly light.
Yeah. Number two, I don't think anyone is a stranger to the data breaches from the past year. I know that my husband and I had to get new cards 4 times. So I'm talking about Target, Home Depot, the most recent Sony hack. We've seen these pop up and almost get bigger and bigger each time. Why do you think that we're seeing so many that were so large, and will we continue to see it happen in 2015, or do you think that we'll get better at stopping it or not making it as huge when it does happen?
Well, I don't think it's going to stop. I do think companies are paying more attention to network security, but I've also seen a number of experts come forward and say, look, an essential problem is this. It's like, think about your house. If someone wants to break into your house, you can have alarms, you can have bars, you can have locks, but if they really want in, they can just almost bulldoze their way in. He was encouraging companies to think about, once they get in, what are they going to find? So if they break into your house and they find a safe that's locked and they can't get into it, then it doesn't matter that they're broken.
Tell everyone who you mean by he.
This was a piece on 60 Minutes.
With Brian Krebs.
And it was Brian Krebs and some other security experts who were on there. And so they were encouraging companies to focus more on encryption of data. And so if someone does break in, they find encrypted files that are of no use to them. And so it's important to have the network security, but don't forget to safeguard what information you have actually in your networks to begin with.
Well, it will continue. It will continue to 2015 and beyond that, unfortunately. Fraudsters, especially those in cyber criminals, are going to try to go after data to produce revenue for them, as well as just for being sinister. You know, there are some who aren't necessarily interested in profits, but rather to go after those who are corporate entities or governments, for that matter, for no other reason but to infiltrate their systems. So that's another reason why organizations have to be diligent, not only corporations but governments as well, to protect that data. You know, from John's perspective, I mean, yes, everything has to be thought of from the cybersecurity side and those individuals, but it also needs to be additional training for maybe people who are on the fringes of that within the company, maybe even human resources, those who are looking for suspicious emails, and being able to have some training to look for data breaches and what to think about, not just within the IT department, but for those who are affected by it as well, I think is a good fraud prevention matter for most companies.
I have to agree with that completely. Back in 1997, I went to one of my first computer security conferences, and one of the speakers was saying the best way to hack into a system is through social engineering. You call people up, you send them phone emails, and you trick them into providing you the information. And so but training your employees as to what to look for and what to be careful for is key.
And quickly on that point, that's where Target, it wasn't Target system so much, but another vendor who had access to it that they're able to make that breach through.
Good points. The third story is really one of my personal favorites because of how outrageous it is. But a woman in Georgia tried to claim a $94 million phony tax return before she was arrested. So the funny part about this story is that she, of course, filed the fake tax return, but then she kept calling to check on its status and to see where it stood and when she was going to get her payout. And then investigators were obviously onto her and said, well, if you want to get it, come meet me at the local grocery store bank, the bank counter, and we will cut you a $94 million check. So she shows up and gets arrested. So I thought it was hilarious that she even thought she could get away with it. But I want to hear your thoughts on these, the motives of these fraudsters and just how outrageous it can become. What does this kind of fraud say about fraudsters or people attempting to defraud the government at such a ridiculous level?
I think it also illustrates an important thing about fraud in general, and that is most people are not caught until they get very greedy. If you go back, and even within companies, and you look at cases, typically they start out a small amount and they steal a small amount of medium size, and then they just keep going larger and it's larger. But it's not until they hit the really big numbers that people actually stop and take notice, and that's how they're caught. Same thing in this case, $94 million, even if I started there yesterday, that would be a red flag. But if she had put in for a phony refund for $300,000, I don't think we would be talking about her. I don't think it would have been caught. until much further down the process. And so I think companies have to put detective controls in place, data analysis, to be looking for these things all the time. They can't just wait until the large 94 million drops in front of them, because typically if they try and steal that much, they've been doing something before that as well. So it's a good illustration of you've got to stop it before it gets to that point.
These are the ones that make the news because of, you know, that the outlandish amount. But when you look at the report to the nations and the median amount, which is about 150,000 U.S., those are the ones continued over time that really do the damage to companies, governments, to the economy in general.
Yeah, and they never stop. I mean, they're not going to go to 100,000 and then call it a day.
Right.
So the next newsmaker, we saw five or more of the largest banks settle with the DOJ for mortgage fraud settlements. And this was for lax practices and misconduct during the financial crisis. So the three biggest settlements were Citigroup for $12 billion, JPMorgan Chase for $26 billion, and Bank of America for $74 billion. So what message do you think these penalties send? And do you think anything has changed at these companies since paying those settlements and how they will continue to do business in the future?
Well, that does concern me, and that's why I do think they do need to be swift and severe. But what we've also seen over the years is other companies look at this and they think either I won't get caught or I'll just get a rap on the knuckles and whatever penalty I have to pay is just the cost of doing business. I can still make money on this. I can pay the penalty, do the fraud, and still make money on it. So I think the regulators and the government, when they're assessing these penalties, have to make sure that it really is a blow to the pocketbook, and it's still not financially a good deal for the company to pay the penalty and do the fraud.
Well, I mean, it certainly sends a message. It certainly has $74 billion is quite substantial. But when you go back and look at the genesis of it, and this goes back five plus years, well, when those penalties are starting to come around, when those profits have previously been made, other lives and companies, you know, through those mortgage-backed securities, is what the article that you're talking about relates to, you know, that the damage has already been done, and now you get to account for it later on these particular financial statements. Well, a lot of times with fraud, it's only as relevant as the current news cycle. And what will happen is, like, okay, well, we got hit with this $1 million fine or this judgment, but we're keeping on doing business. Was the corporate culture changed by what happened? And you know, we can only wait and see, but hopefully that takes place within boards of directors. Unfortunately, this type of story goes beyond just mortgage fraud on the topic, with interest rates, with the LIBOR scandal. When you start looking at foreign exchange rates and those, the manipulation there, you know, there is a lot within the financial industry that has to be reined in, and hopefully by having these fines as it relates to mortgage fraud and the investigations and criminal and civil actions as it relates to other areas is in fact going to send that message. Time will tell.
So our last news piece is actually on a happy note. It's a good news story. We did see this year companies doing their due diligence, like you just said, changing their corporate culture. And we've seen that with our own corporate alliance program. You know, we've seen these companies come forward and say, yes, I want to take a stand. So, John, you had mentioned a news story to me about Morgan Stanley. They did not get charged or fined by the DOJ or SEC for an FCPA violation that a managing director made because they had a strong compliance program. So what does this say to those large companies who are out there doing the right thing, changing their company culture? What example does this set for other larger companies who aren't doing that?
What this is saying to me is right now we have a good opportunity to do some very effective training. And this recent Morgan Stanley case, I thought, was a good example of there was a Foreign Corrupt Practices Act violation. They self-reported it. The government took a look at it and they said, look, you did everything you reasonably could do. You had effective training, number of in-person online training sessions on just this thing. And so he was a rogue employee and you did everything that you could do. Companies are also nervous about Dodd-Frank. We're starting to see more Dodd-Frank whistleblower cases making their way through this, and companies are extremely nervous about employees who know of wrongdoing just skipping the internal reporting process and going directly to the government. And so with these two things occurring, I think it's a good message to employees that internal training at this point in time is crucial. If you conduct your training, you do it properly, the government will look at that, and if there is a violation, you make just actually, there's no prosecution whatsoever because you tried to do everything you could. On the other end, if you tell employees, look, we do not accept this conduct, we do not stand for fraud, and here is the way to report it. We will protect you, we won't retaliate against you, let us know about it, then I think you can encourage employees to take advantage of the internal mechanisms first before they run to the federal government. That gives you a better opportunity to be able to address the issues and then conduct your own investigation and present that to the government yourself. And I think there's some substantial rewards that can be gained from that.
I see two big points with this, Mandy. One, you have Morgan Stanley, which is a huge player in the financial services industry. They're doing everything that they can, and they're following the guidelines that we have talked and preached about for over 25 years at the ACFE. And they've got the programs. They're making sure that everyone has it on multiple levels in training, emails, everything, that even flashing lights dinging on the door as they walk inside. But on the second point, it shows and illustrates that regardless of what we do, there are still going to be criminal mind is still there. And that we can be as vigilant, we can have the best corporate culture in the world, but we still have to recognize there's going to be somebody in there. We cannot be 100% free from fraud regardless of what we do. This is obviously, it shows that if you're doing everything that you're supposed to, you're not going to be in trouble with it, at least in terms with the government. You're still going to have shareholder problems with because of the effect on the company and these types of activities, breaches, as we discussed earlier. But it does show and illustrates that companies are picking up on this and doing the right thing.
Good point. Well, thank you both very much for sitting down with me and talking about these stories. I think we can all agree that we'll see newsmakers like these into 2015 and into 2016. But I think that what we did agree on also is that there's a silver lining and that there's things that companies can do and are doing to prevent these frauds. And hopefully we'll see a deterrence of them next year. But thank you very much. And John, did you want to add something?
Well, I would say, just follow up on what you said, the situation is never hopeless. Every year you look at what happened and data breaches, and even when we had the financial crisis, and every year people think, oh, it's the end of the world, but it's not. There are resources available to stop, look at your organization, think what your vulnerabilities are, and address those. And so it's never the end of the world. There's always a way to fix the problem, but you first have to acknowledge there is a problem, and what can I do to make my house secure here?
I thought you were going to break into some REM there for a second.
Everybody cries.
Feel fine.
No, to follow with John's point, we are always going to have fraud. It will always be a problem. What a lot of companies are doing is the right thing. And they're following good fraud prevention, awareness, and education measures. And we're seeing that with the growth of anti-fraud professionals within the ACFE's membership.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the last podcast of 2014. This is Mandy Moody signing off, and you can find more podcasts at acfe.com/podcast, and I will talk to you in the new year.